We'll make sure that you have a chance to get to know Liz throughout the hour, but first we'll open up with a song. Here is Liz McBride.
Tell another lie to your mama who's getting by. Tell another joke to your brother who doesn't know. The secrets you are keeping, the pain you won't give up. Tell another lie to your mama who's getting by. Give yourself a break and the sadness will go away. For all you hold inside, it's a wonder why you never hide. You know your time is coming, so keep your chin up. Give yourself a break and the sadness will go away. By you on all the people that you see through. You know they might mean well, kid, but they'll never understand. A thousand little eyes and a spider who caught the fly.
Liz McBride, and tell me a little bit about that song. That was a great song to open with.
Thank you. My first job was at a Dairy Queen, and it was fun the first few years. This was a seasonal Dairy Queen. My mom dragged me down there. This was not my choice. I was 14, and she said, let's get you a job. So I would work at this Dairy Queen during the summers, and it was coming of age, like you're making money. A lot of that money went toward my music gear. I got to keep it for cash during the school year and through college. But this song was actually inspired by the years it no longer was fun or interesting. And I remember reaching into this like chest freezer one day at work. I was having a really bad day. And I was thinking like, what am I gonna tell my mom about today? And you have to like take the dilly bars and put them in a display case at the front. So I was grabbing those dilly bars and Buster bars. And
they're probably really like super frozen, right?
Yes.
To make them last however long they have to last.
Exactly. So I'm cold. I have this weird jacket on. I'm like climbing in, almost diving in because I'm short. And I'm just like having four or five of them and dragging them back and like up from the back to the front. And I'm like, what am I going to tell my mom about work today? Like, I'm having an awful day. And that's where that first line came from.
What a great, that's a very evocative memory. I'm amazed that it was fun for a couple years. Because that's the kind of job I would think would be just amazing maybe for the first week.
You would think that? And it wasn't even about the ice cream. Like, you'd think, like, oh, great, you have access to it. And that was there. But it was more like the shift that I worked, the boss would leave in the afternoon, and she'd come back to help us close and count the drawers. So it was like letting the animals in the zoo run the zoo.
What town was this in?
Youngstown.
So you had a chance to see a lot of people. And I always forget that you're from Youngstown. We have a lot of family there, too. But at Youngstown— is a sizable enough city that there's lots going on, but it's also small enough that you probably got to see a lot of neighbors and people as you were doing that. When did you – were you playing music at that time?
Yes and no. I was – it was more about, like, work and kind of doing my own thing. Like, I'm a bedroom musician, I think, first and foremost. Like, I perform when I can. So that money I was mentioning, I bought, a four-track recorder. I had an electric guitar. I bought, eventually, a bass. And I was just, like, going to work. And then it was summertime, having fun. Sometimes I'd go out when I was old enough for that. But I'd go home, and I was just, like, in my room kind of writing and playing around with stuff.
Yeah, you had mentioned a music year for you, so you were able to earn money to be able to do those sorts of things, which has got to be really empowering to do that. Did you were you writing your own songs at that time too, or were you more trying to learn how to do, you know, cover songs and such?
Covers. It always started with covers. Like I wasn't really thinking about writing until I thought about writing.
And I say that it's a little hard because I know Liz pretty well here, but I want you to get to know her too as we're talking. Liz has some incredible versions of songs written by other people in addition to their own. And a lot of folks have mentioned to me how much they've enjoyed hearing those. And I hope you're aware of that, how much people enjoy your spin on songs. Why don't we listen to another song? We'll talk a little bit more afterwards, but what would you like to play next?
Yeah, so actually what I had lined up is a version of My Favorite Things, and it's kind of this offshoot. So part of the song is Familiar to get you acquainted, and then the other part of it, I'm going to ask you what you think is happening for these other parts that I've added, but I'll play a cover next.
Excellent. Here again is Liz McBride.
Raindrops and roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Saturday cleanings to practice my patience, popping the bubbles, taking their fragrance, thoughts moving aimlessly like they have wings. Are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel a gentle push forward, watching my cat at the window chirp at birds, my afternoon nap, the joy that it brings. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad. Oh, ooh, ooh.
Liz McBride, what a What a great thing you did there to juxtapose what I will consider some great pathways to solitude and rest and balance, as well as what some may consider some great coping mechanisms for dealing with stress or the sometimes intense rhythm of the world. What a beautiful song.
Thank you. May I say more a little bit about the song?
I was going to ask you, please.
And covers, like, so this is describing my perfect Saturday. I have the weekends off more often than not. And one thing I like to ask myself, I said this to a client earlier today, where do I want to be by 2 p.m.? And most of the time, it's taking that nap after the chores.
me too, actually, on a Saturday. I am sometimes embarrassed to admit, you know, we're done at noon, there's some things to do, and I'll probably be taking a nap by 2.
Yes, and it is like rest well earned, you know? And then other times I'm out in the world and I'm doing things, but it's like I didn't think of balance until you said it. And I don't know. I take my relaxation just as seriously as I do my work, and I think it ensures the quality of the work that I do. That's my first thought, particularly about this song, and it's a really positive labor of love to do covers and to, I don't know, take a spin. I say this respectfully because we all as musicians start playing songs written by other people and in between kind of dabbling with stuff that we're writing, playing, however you evolve. I went to an open mic night once and this guy was like, I asked him, you know, I forget his name, but I was like, what covers do you like to play? Who do you like to, what are some songs you like to do? Because I always have Beatles songs ready.
Mm-hmm.
They're my favorite, as you know. And he was like, covers? I don't play covers. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know how to respond. And I think he kind of read my expression and was like, they're not playing my songs. And I thought that was pretty bold, brash, you know, and disrespectful to a history of art making in a music way.
Well, and perhaps to you in that context, too, although not intentionally, but why get so excited about that too, right?
And I found it more interesting. I wasn't offended necessarily. I walked away thinking, you know, and when I reflect on it later, I'm like, actually, this is part of my brand if I'm going to have one, you know. If I'm going to play a cover, how do I rework it in a way that I wrote it while keeping in mind the deference and the people that shaped, you know, my favorite things? I mean, that's a classic musical song. It's from The Sound of Music, right? Like, I rework it with respect.
Well, and that's a time-honored tradition known as the folk process, right?
Yeah.
Where you add your own, I hate to call it spin, but your own style and touches to a song that's meaningful for you. And I think the authors of songs would be very moved to know that the art they created is inspiring you and moving you to add to it in that way.
Yeah.
And covers, it's funny, covers aren't a bad thing. I don't know why people, I get asked that question a lot. Is it okay if I play covers? I said, of course it is. And sometimes I think I'm being asked that for licensing reasons, but there's nothing wrong with playing a cover.
Yeah.
or solely covers, for that matter. There's somebody who plays at Nova Place at Federal Galley, which I pass on the way to where I park to be in this building. And he's has these very inventive versions of covers of songs. I can't remember any of the particular songs now, but I'll hear the lyrics and it's like, really? Is that what this is? And he'll have changed the tempo and just the delivery of the song. Sometimes not the lyrics, but just the manner in which it's presented.
Yeah.
And I need to stop and find out who this guy is because he's there often enough that I'd like to learn who he is.
Yeah, it sounds like spiritual family because you go to – I'm starting to go to more singer-songwriter-like listening spaces, which is – right up my alley. And the rules are, if you get on some of those bills, it's like, don't play a cover. Like, this is for you to play your stuff. And then that's kind of hoity-toity in a different way, or too serious in a different way. I'll respect the rules if I go. And I, you know, I'm offered that space on a stage. And I agree with you. There's nothing wrong with playing a cover. It's a, it brings out new meaning of that song. You know, you heard something new, you hear something new, and that person stuck out to you.
Yes, and I felt compelled to tell you how that, the additions you made to that song, to tell you how they made me feel, because they really did make me feel. They were really interested. I'm a big fan of the John Coltrane version of My Favorite Things, which I'm assuming you know. Maybe you don't. Oh, gosh. It's maybe a seven-minute lyricless jazz sax version of that song. And in fact, I just listened to it on Monday, and that song always makes me feel good, just the melody itself. Liz McBride is here. We've linked to Liz's music page on Bandcamp, which I think is the best place to find you.
Yes.
And there's an album of Beatles covers. There's, gosh, you've got like eight albums up there, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to see. We were talking about Bert Jansch earlier, and I Googled you on Thursday because I was looking for the best site to link to, and that came up first.
The Bert Jansch Foundation?
Yes. Tell me about that. I'm not suggesting you play that song, but how did that relationship come about?
That's a great question that I'm clearly very excited. I hope you hear the smile to
share. Yeah. Now, Bert Jansch I think of him as a seminal songwriter and folk musician, gosh, from the 70s, maybe even earlier. I've been playing his music for years.
Yeah, late 60s, 70s. We were laughing, but it's a true story. This is where the internet is a cool thing in how it really connects people in the positive way. YouTube is another great place to find my music. I'm passionate about making weird videos and having like a music spin on it, and I like to play with editing software, so that's another space to, I guess, put out my creative energy. And I put up a cover almost 10 years ago at this point, which I cannot believe. I was in college in my dorm room playing Tell Me What Is True Love, which is a song that kind of gets people into Bert Jansch's music. It's a favorite. It was the first song of his that I heard, and it got a lot of views. And then through that, somebody from the Bert Jansch Foundation found that. They have a foundation and a project that they do where they pass around a guitar over the course of a year. And they said, we saw your videos. We'd like to feature you for the Bert Jansch Foundation. I forget what it's called, something song. It's modeled after his favorite performance guitar. It's like a Yamaha something or other. They shipped it to my house, and they said, make a video of you playing your favorite Bert Jansch song. We'd kind of like you to play Tell Me What Is True Love, and we'll put it up on the Bert Jansch Foundation site, their YouTube channel, for that guitar kind of series project that they do. But it was the internet. Somebody messaged me. The details around that are fuzzy, but I put up a video, I forgot about it, and then years later, people found it.
That's incredible. He was in a group called Pentangle,
yep.
which we used to play quite a bit. I didn't realize that he died at the age of 67. He was pretty young when he passed away, but that's what an honor for you to have that picked up.
Yeah.
And the internet can make the world seem mean and angry. It can also make the world seem small and connected. It all, like life itself, it depends on who you choose to surround yourself with and how you choose to look at things. But I was just tickled when that came up. At first, my first reaction, no offense, was, is this another Liz McBride? And then I said, how is this possible? And Mostly I said that because I was thinking, how did she connect with somebody who, like, probably died, like, when she was not yet an adult?
I was a concept at that point.
Yeah. So what a great thing happening. Now, we're excited to have you at the Solar Concert Series this Thursday at Nova Place. Are you playing out anywhere else soon?
Yeah. So after the Solar Series, that'll finish up the August shows that I have. And then I'm playing a house show Saturday, September 17th. My friend Jim Marcus is dedicated to featuring musicians. I guess it's the closest thing to a residency that I have because he keeps inviting me back. It's one of my other favorite places to play in Pittsburgh, and there's a link to RSVP to that party if you're interested in coming out. I think he asked me to post about it on Facebook, which means he is wanting to share it out and have more people come to his actual house, but see me for details around that. You can go to my personal Facebook page, if you search Liz McBride. I tend to post on the cover page that picture, links to shows, and there is one up there about that September 17th show that
excellent.
People can find.
And we'll make sure we loop you in on a post, too, so people can go to that if we haven't already. And in terms of music availability, if people are listening to you and want to either stream or perhaps buy something you've done, the Bandcamp site's probably the best for that.
That's the main one.
So you can just go to Liz's Bandcamp site and find music there. That's not to give an endorsement, but that's typically the most equitable way to acquire music for artists other than actually purchasing it directly from their own website. From what I've been told, at least, anyway, the way those models go. You're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Liz McBride is here, and there are people saying, let that woman sing another song. Larry, stop. So what would you like to do next?
This next song, this will be an original. It is called 5 to 7. And that is all I have to say. Pouting about love and all its demands. Rock, what I don't understand, but knows my mind's eye that it's like that sometimes, and that there are other things to distract my heart from feeling unimportant. Yet I want the love you
Such a nice sound. Is your guitar tuned in a typical tuning? Mm-hmm. There's something about the notes coming from that guitar that are different, and I can't tell you. Maybe it's just the tone of the instrument, but they just float as you're playing them, and it really fits you very well. Have you had that guitar for a long time?
Not long at all. I mean, I got it a few months ago. I got a raise, and this is the celebration gift to myself.
Be good to yourself. That's
yes.
Yeah, it just sounds good. And it might just be the notes you are playing, not the guitar. Let's give you some credit, too. And I'm kind of fond of the music that is, you know, intricate and beautiful, but also that still allows you to hear the lyrics at the same time. So that may be why I'm enjoying it so much. What kind of guitar is it? Some people are probably wondering.
This is an Eastman. I don't know models. I'm not a gear girl.
But well, you got it to celebrate, so you're happy with it.
I consulted with somebody I really trust about which models to get, how to really like make an informed decision. I'm also somebody that's like, the stuff will do the job. I don't need the most expensive thing. I think some people would disagree. But I'm also like, I don't know, I can play really well. So like, it's going to sound good.
Yeah. As long as it, I call these things, as long as it's a competent guitar, right?
That's, I like that.
That's the word I will use. You know, is this a competent mixer? Is it a competent phone? Because I think people who are looking for the best of things, there almost is no such – well, there really isn't any such thing.
A lot of things are like a mindset. I can see, you know, I can be convinced, you know. And I also know, like, until you try something and you give it a shot, you know, there's information there. But I think the insistence that it has to be – this decibel watt oak built in the Netherlands, like, I don't, that's fine. And competent will work too.
Yes, it's, well, and I've talked about this before, but I think you'd appreciate it. Still, one of the best books I've ever read is a book called The Paradox of Choice. And our lives, we've been taught that here in our country, we're also happy because we've got lots of choices, and the more choices we have, the happier we are, to a point.
Yep.
Like, Ford or Chevy or Honda and a pickup truck, okay. But add 8 other brands and then give each 2 different models within their brand, and before you know it, you want the engine of the Honda with the color of the Ford and the seat of the Chevy and the price of the Kia. And what you want is impossible because all those dizzying choices result in a desire that simply doesn't exist.
May I share my example
please,
of that?
Please, please.
Analysis by paralysis.
Yeah.
I always imagine myself at like the grocery store in like the sauces aisle, and it's like all the pasta sauces, and I'm just like, which one do I pick?
Have you read that book?
No.
He uses, I think it's Ragu.
Oh, cool.
He uses pasta sauces as an example.
Wow.
And I'm a fortunate fella because the woman I'm related to by marriage, who coincidentally is my wife, does 99% of the grocery shopping. But I get physically a little sick if I go into a store that big. I just can't take all those choices.
Yeah, I mean, my mind went there because that's the thing for me,
yeah,
too. What's the word? It, like, produces the most dread.
Yeah, and paralysis of that analysis is the perfect way to put it. You just shut down.
And then, I apologize for interrupting.
Oh, no, you're not.
There's the choice, like, how do I pick out of all the things, because it really does feel like a wall. Like, I can almost imagine it in my brain, and I will be going to the store later today.
Ricky might be willing. We could ask her to go.
It's like, you make the choice, and then my clients will talk about, like, okay, well, what if, is it right? Have I done the thing? And it can just spiral so quickly, you know?
It sure can. We talk all the, when we teach the art of interviewing other people, and this is something I've learned, it's very important to me. A lot of people immediately want to ask an interviewee, what is your favorite part about being a therapist? Or what is the moment you're proudest of about being a public defender? And I feel that when you ask people to identify a superlative of any type, the most, the best, the favorite, that that person is going to shut down, because you're asking them to make such a singular choice, and they might even feel consequences. Even a five-year-old, I would not ask, what is your favorite color? I would say, tell me about some colors that you like. If he only likes blue, he'll let me know. But I don't want to set him up for having to think, what do I say? Because some days it's pink and some days it's blue and some days it's green. And I've done this enough that I know that people will shut down if you ask that kind of question that is so...
kind of finite.
Yeah, yeah. It's and I think about that kind of stuff a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even with the work that I do, I think the therapist piece, like being in session, very rich. It's a very rich profession, one that fills me with as much like wonder and passion as music, but in a different way. And I'm dipping into more clinical supervision and like helping therapists who are in the field to learn, or who are my colleagues, like peer supervision and hear about their process, remind gently of policies, things like that at work. And it's really active listening. You know, if you think about a conversation and what opens it up the most, the fastest, open-ended questions, but we have to be careful and thoughtful, because you're right. That's an open-ended question. What is the best part about being a radio show host? The best, right? It's putting you in a box. So the tell me approach, it's like turning on a faucet and water will just...
Right, or one of the best. It's so subtle. It's two words,
exactly.
Or three words, two words, one of the... also in our interviewing, you know, questions, and people, even adults, will either want to prepare a detailed question list,
yeah,
or every now and then somebody will say, can you send me a list of your questions? And I say, well, one of my favorite ways to say no is, well, I'm not in a position to do that. Which can mean a lot of things. It can mean I'm not near a computer. It can mean I don't do that. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I really can't honestly do that, because after the first question, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So you can't work that question list with precision, because if you do, you might as well not even be listening.
Yeah.
And I know why people want it. They want to feel more comfortable either as the asker or the person being interviewed. It provides a sense of security, but it's just not going to work that way,
yeah,
at the end of the day.
May I say, Larry, I feel so seen talking to you about this. This is the stuff that I will like rail on excitedly, positively, or sometimes negatively in like supervision. You know, I'm just like, guys, look at this. And it's like the end of times. Like, that's when I have my sign being like, don't you get it? You know? And people look at me, colleagues in my profession, like I'm, like I've got eight heads. Like, what are you talking about? You know? So somebody else that understands that there's a safety that can be, because we're navigating something together. it's not, I don't need 8 questions, like, what is this? Like, I'm so excited to be back here again because I know what this is going to be. And I feel very safe here to express and to play. And my favorite part right now is that we're talking.
Well, thank you. And the same here. It's important to me that we talk because it's what makes this a different experience for people listening. They get to find out who you are, a little bit about what makes you tick. And we as a people have made people frightened to talk without a net or uncomfortable to put themselves in a place of uncertainty. I think, too, we've just finished this social justice documentary series with teens, so a lot of these examples are on my mind. And a lot of those interviews are recorded rather than aired live. And one of the things we'll talk about is it's okay to give the person you're talking to time to answer. It's okay to pause. In fact, when you think that person is done, wait a beat, because they may actually have something else they want to say. And I think it's because if we have any exposure to media, but even life itself, it moves so fast, and we're conditioned to think that the whole world is edited, to move in a rapid pace. And that's really not the way life works.
Yeah.
It's hard to help people see that, but it's really gratifying when it happens.
There's a trusting of a process.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think I have it all figured out, by the way. I don't think you do either. I mean, all of this is just as people listen. You know, these aren't all the answers. Liz McBride is the person you're listening to. I hope you'll come by August 31st. It's free. Nova Place is a beautiful facility. It's you might know it as the Allegheny Center Mall from years gone by. It's right across from the Children's Museum. We're probably going to have time for 2 more songs if I don't yap too much. What would you like to do next?
I think I want to end, so my last 2 will be, because another folky I love, what is his name? Jim Croce.
Yeah. I had all of his albums growing up. Nice. And they were cassettes, actually. I had his albums on cassette.
Cool. So the one I'm going to play now is I've Got a Name.
A beautiful song.
Trees lining the winding road. I've got a name. I've got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad. I've got a name. I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did. But I'm living the dream that he kept hid. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't pass me by. Like the north wind whistling down the sky, I've got a song, I've got a song. Me nowhere.
Liz McBride, you are one good guitar player. Are you self-taught?
Or yes.
It has more to do with you and your personality than your playing. I had a feeling you would be, that you would just sort of decide, I'm going to do this and I'm going to learn. That song, I had to look it up to make sure my memory was right, but it was released a day after he died. Jim Croce died in a plane crash. I had the year up in front of me, and I close it in 1973. He died September 20th, 1973, and this single was released the next day. I think that was probably serendipitous. I don't think the world would have moved that quickly to drop a single on that very next day. It must have been in the works, but A Number, A Time in a Bottle was a posthumous hit for him as well. Just an incredible performer. And his music seems to be undergoing a resurgence. How did you find Jim Croce?
I think I was, a lot of these songs kind of find me, and I don't know if I heard it in a show. Time in a Bottle, I was struggling to learn Operator, which is weirdly difficult for me to figure out.
Yeah, and nobody knows what a dime is for a phone call anymore,
right.
But or an operator for that standard.
It was like, not of this time. And when that tends to happen, then I'm like, okay, what can I learn? And maybe from there, that's where I heard I Got a Name and Time in a Bottle. I was going to play that, but I think I'm going to play something else that speaks to the kind of, guitar player, musician that I am. But
it's totally your choice.
Yeah. But Jim Croce, I found him randomly, and I was like, I like how that sounds. Can I figure it out? And then you find more stuff.
Yeah, his, with digital music services, they really can take you back, and you can start exploring. And I forget what, I think it was Rapid Roy, the Stock Car Boy, which is one of his songs. And I realized that I knew the songs in order on his three major releases before he died, the three that were released during his life. And it's like, I know every song in order because I listen to those albums over and over again. And just beautiful. There's a lot of great performance videos of him playing with his longtime guitar partner, whose name escapes me. They just sound great together.
That's the stuff I just get lost on YouTube watching at 2 a.m. and this ubiquitous 70s stage with those old microphones. And you're like, how did they even, it's just amazing, those kinds of performances, stages, especially for artists that are no longer with us.
Yeah.
It freezes them in time.
It's
to be discovered later.
Incredible. I want to be sure, so your concert is part of our Solar Series, August 31st, Nova Place, 12:15. And then the house concert, the date for that again?
September 17th.
Yes, that's a Sunday, I know for sure.
Yeah.
Because our wedding anniversary is Sunday, September 10th.
Nice.
So the 17th, and you can find more about that at Liz's Facebook page, and follow her there and go to her Bandcamp site, which we've linked to. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
It's a real joy. We'll both be taking our naps later today, perhaps.
Yes.
And what are you going to finish up with?
I want to play Heart of Gold.
Oh, a great, not Jim Croce, but Neil Young, a great song. Here again, for the last time today, but not the last time, Liz McBride.
Thank you. searching for a